So, am I on here? I want to get you all that. over the last few weeks, the last month or so, we've been walking through the book of Ruth, and we've discovered that the book of Ruth is much more than just a little love story. It's a story about God and how he restores and redeems those who look to him in hope. It's about God's covenantal faithfulness. It's about his great kindness. And what is the word for God's loyal loving kindness that we read in the scriptures in the Hebrew? Hesed. Good, good. Some of you guys are working on your Hebrew. That's awesome. I appreciate that. The big question that the book of Ruth begs us to ask, I think, is this. The question is, where is God in the midst of life's most difficult and disappointing circumstances? And the answer that we see in this story is that God is always present in hard times. He always has a purpose in our trials and in our pain. And there's always hope, because in any situation, God can and will redeem those and restore those who belong to him. It's just who he is, and we see this over and over again in the scriptures. Although sometimes it doesn't happen in the way that we would like for it to happen, especially if we were writing our own story, because it's easy to see God's faithfulness in somebody else's story or to have patience in somebody else's story, but not so easy in the midst of our own. So this morning we're going to hear another love story. A New Hope love story. I call this Ruth chapter 5. And like the book of Ruth, this story is more than just a love story. It's the story of how God redeemed and restored the lives of two of our very own. So I'm going to ask Bob and Donna McLean if they would come up and join me and give us just a moment as we transition here. I've asked these guys to bring some notes up with them, so if it looks like this is in any way disingenuous, it's very hard to get up and share your story. And Bob and Donna, they started attending New Hope here last Christmas in person, and over the last year I've got to know them, and I've heard their story, heard both of their stories on a few different occasions now. And there's so much more to their story than what they're going to share with you this morning. But this is like when you watch a movie on TV and it says that it's been edited for time and content. we're just going to do our best to kind of give you the highlights from their story, which I still think is going to be very impactful. And I think that you'll see the tie-ins in what we've read in the book of Ruth over the last few weeks. Your story, Bob and Donna, has so many parallels with the story of Ruth that we read, and I've talked to you about what some of those are. But one of the parallels that I see, just most obviously, is that just like Boaz in the story of Ruth and Boaz, Bob's also a lot older than Donna. So, I'm gonna have them share their story. But I just want to say thank you to you guys for being willing to share your story with us. And I am going to start with Bob, but I didn't do this in the first service, and I want to do this in this service. I just want to pray for both of you before you share your story with us. Is that okay? Yeah, let me do that. Father, I thank you so much for your faithfulness to us. And God, sometimes it's easy for us to read a story in the Bible on this side of things and say, yeah, okay, well, that's a story about God and how he was faithful. But what's he doing now? What has he done for me lately? What's he doing in my life? Why am I experiencing brokenness and pain, and why don't I experience the happy ending or the good feeling that comes from redemption and restoration all the time in my life? And God, you are at work in our lives, whether we recognize it or not. And I thank you for the way that your hand has been evident in Bob and Donna's story. And just I thank you for the last year as I've got to know them, just how their story has really spoken to me. And so for your glory, not for theirs this morning, and I know they would agree, God, we just ask that you'd give them the ability to clearly communicate today. I ask that your spirit would just give them, put them at ease, and not that they wouldn't be anxious as they share, but that you'd just give clarity to their minds. And God, that you'd open our hearts and minds for what it is that you want to share with us through their story today. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen. So Bob, tell me a little bit about your background, what your life was like as a kid growing up, and how you came to know Jesus.
I was born in Ridgeway, Pennsylvania. It's up in the mountains, down, if anybody knows where Olean is, it's just a little bit south of Olean in the Allegheny Mountains. Shortly after I was born, we moved from the Ridgeway area to a coal mining village. My dad worked in the coal mines for a little bit. So I've always said I grew up with mud streaks and black. Everything was black. My brother and I were always black. We didn't really go to church, maybe on Easter and Christmas. I really don't remember going to church much, except for Sunday school. My parents seemed to get us to Sunday school at times. I mean, it was hit and miss. It was never anything regular. When I was about 11, 12 years old, my dad had previously moved from the coal mine or living or working in the coal mines to working in a factory in Ridgeway. So he bought a house in Ridgeway and we moved to town. I thought life was pretty good. We started going to the Alliance Church. My mother got saved. My dad had always had a drinking problem. In today's standards, he's an alcoholic, basically. That still happened even when we moved into town. My dad wrestled with God for many, many years. But that's where I met Jesus, going to church. My mother made me go to church just about all the time. The Lions Church had service in the morning and Sunday night and Wednesday night and Friday night. And I mean, I was always at church. So it wasn't long that I became a Christian, very strong Christian, as it was as a teen. I carried my Bible to school, which even back then wasn't a great thing. It was teased a lot because I was carrying a Bible. But at that time, I was called by God, that I felt anyway, to be a missionary. And so as the time went, that's what I wanted to do, was be a missionary pilot, a bush pilot. And so that was in my plans.
So when I hear your story, you're born in Ridgeway, but shortly thereafter moved to the coal mining village. And I know of coal mining is what I see on the History Channel, and I know it wasn't an easy job, and I'm sure you had a tough childhood, but it sounds like you moved back into town, had a home. It sounds like things were going pretty well for you as a kid, and it had a pretty good childhood. So what happened then?
Well, like you said, it was a pretty good life till my junior year of high school. My dad lost his job. So halfway through my junior year, we had to move to Connecticut. My dad wouldn't let me stay there in Pennsylvania, which I wanted to do with friends from the church, but that wasn't going to happen. So I moved to Connecticut, which I called the city. It's comparatively a country boy living in the city, and I didn't like it. And I said I was going to leave as soon as I could. And I did. I left and I went to college. I went to Nyack College, which is, well, at that time I was Nyack Missionary College. And so I was going to be a missionary, and that's what God had called me to. But I was still kind of doing things my own way. I mean, I felt that was the calling, but I was going to do it my way. I played basketball for Nyack. I just was, you know, the teen, you know, the late teen, just having fun in life.
So, I mean, I think that's that part of your story, probably a lot of us can relate to also. In fact, actually, that's what we see for a lot of us, is that we have a relationship with God. We believe we're really maybe not pursuing him as much as we'd like, but as long as we kind of, as long as we got some good things happening, you know, you were still going to a Christian school, you were pursuing missions, maybe you were doing some things your own way, but you felt like you were probably on a pretty good course, and things were going well for you, you'd probably say, if somebody would look at it from the outside. And then you hit a snag there. What happened next?
Well, during that time, I basically fell in love with a girl from church back home in Connecticut, the Alliance Church. Everybody felt that we were the perfect couple, the Christian couple. We were going to, you know, we should be married. I mean, it was, that's the way it was. But the time came for her to decide if she was going to go to college or what. And so she decided to go to Roberts instead of coming to NIAC. And me, I look back at it saying, I don't think I prayed much about it. I just changed schools. I went from NIAC up to RIT in Rochester so I could be close to her. Maybe too close, because we broke up and it was over with, and all this perfect relationship was gone. And I went back to NIAC, but at the time I was mad at God. I even though I was back to Bible school studying, all of a sudden I was an A student instead of a C student. So everything seemed good, but me and God were really separate. Mm. You know?
So you're back at school. You're kind of following God. You're not following the girl anymore. And and then what happened?
Well, of course, it seemed like nothing was going to go right during that time. I mean, I was mad at God, and so maybe God was mad at me. I don't know. But I got my draft card in the mail, and all of a sudden I was taken off a student status and church status, and I became 1A. And if you're old enough to know what that is, 1A means you're gone. And, of course, it was the middle of Vietnam, and I said, well, I'm not afraid to go. I was going to go, but I decided maybe I'd do it my way, so I joined the Air Force instead of getting drafted. I kind of went around the draft. I went in the Air Force. I spent the next 35 years total, my military career, next 35 years, I was away from God, you know.
So you know, they sent you not to Vietnam, they sent you to the Philippines.
And yeah. That's... Yeah, I had asked to go to Vietnam, of course. I wanted to go to war, and not everybody got to do that, even though we wanted to. It was a different type of war. And they sent me to the Philippines, to a small island in the southern part of the Philippines. So I did my tour.
It's a long way from Connecticut or Ridgeway, PA.
Oh, yeah. I was a long ways away from home. But I always felt I didn't have a home except for, you know.
So again, you know, we see your story, kid growing up. You come to know Christ as a little kid. You feel a calling to missions. You're kind of moving in obedience, but you're kind of trying to do things your own way still, and you end up drifting away from God. So I'm going to pause your story with you in the Philippines, and I'm going to turn our attention to Donna for a few minutes. Donna, tell us a little bit about your background, about your family situation growing up, and how did you come to know Jesus?
Yeah, sure. I was born into a family of... I was the seventh child, so... that was okay. There's a lot of families that are that big, but the nuance on my family was my closest brother or sister was 18 years old. So that put a difference in how I relate to my siblings that are older than me, and it also put a, I believe, a strain on my parents' relationship. And because my parents were so advanced in age for having children, the doctor advised my parents that I would probably be born with Down syndrome, and they needed to make some decisions in regards to that. But thanks be to God that I was not born with Down syndrome. But still, I think that my birth greatly affected my parents and their marriage. And also, with my siblings being so much older than I, there was also a unique opportunity in that my sister actually gave birth shortly after my mother, like within hours. So When I was born, I was actually an aunt to two, and with ours, I was an aunt to three, which definitely made for a different life and upbringing and relationships. My father was an alcoholic, and again, that was another strain on my parents' marriage. And one day, I came to realize that my dad wasn't living at home anymore. And I couldn't figure that out. I was quite young, probably 6 or 7, and I just couldn't figure that out. But then I finally realized what happened. He was having an affair with my aunt, and my dad was asked to leave. I still had a relationship with my dad because he came over every night to see me, and we had dinner together. So I still had a relationship, and I still wasn't getting the gist of what was going on in my family. I just knew that it was probably not the right thing to be happening in a family. But I just didn't know what it was. And then, so we quickly became a dysfunctional family with two households to maintain on one salary. So that changed my economic status as well, which, you know, put different strains on different relationships. As I became older, I understood more about how that particular event affected my family. And when I was 14... my dad actually moved back. And I was like, oh, good, life is going to be good. But there was one little problem. My dad was still an alcoholic. And when he had his episodes, he would usually leave me alone and pay more attention to my mom in a negative way. And me and my mom had grown quite close together during that time, because I was the only one of the children left home, so it was just her and I through that whole separation time. And one night he actually went after her, and I stepped in between, and he actually lunged at me with a knife. So that changed my relationship with my dad, and definitely put some walls up between the two of us.
So I think it's safe to say that your childhood, your whole childhood, could be categorized as difficult and disappointing and difficult circumstances. So in the midst of all of that, then how is it that you came to know Jesus?
Well, because my siblings were so much older than I am, I have nieces and nephews my age, and one of my nieces was over one day to our house, and we were doing that fooling around, and those infomercials were on. And so we decided we would make the prank and call one of the infomercials and give each other's information. So we connected with them. And my mom caught on to what we were doing. And fine, she goes, that's fine. You have to do what you signed each other up for. And so my niece actually signed me up for a 6-week Bible study. But yeah, and somewhere she got to learn how to model. But my mother, Tuesday night rolled along, and my mother said, go, go, go. And so I went to a local pastor's house, and I witnessed what a perfect family should look like, who loved and supported each other and who cared about each other. And that was very appealing to me. So the next week, my Tuesday night came, and there was no, because I wanted to see what that was more about. And so it became more appealing to me, and they became my second perfect family. But the one thing I was raised with from the time I was born was that you never, ever, ever shared with anyone outside your home, and sometimes that was my siblings, of what was going on behind closed doors. And so I never, ever shared that with my perfect second family. And we proceeded to become friends and really get to know each other. And they asked me to go to an event down at the Civic Center. And it was the Word of Life program. And we went to the Civic Center, and I gave my heart to the Lord that night. And it was March 13th, 1978. So I was a sophomore in high school. So
in spite of everything that had happened growing up, your this new, through your relationship with this new family, you came to know Jesus and you gave your heart to Jesus. So it sounds like everything's going in a really good direction for you now.
Yeah. So I graduated high school, and I applied to Houghton College, and I was accepted. So I took off to Houghton, and I thought, finally, I'm going to be able to start my life without all of that following me. And that's what young people think, I think, is that your past won't follow you. But I was there late August, September, middle of October, and my phone rang, and it was my dad.
Now, where did you go to school? I
don't know if you... Oh, Houghton College.
Okay.
And it was my dad telling me my mom had had a heart attack, and I needed to come home, and he was sending my brother. So I came home. My mom survived, thank God. And my parents had separated before that, and my worry became my mom being by herself and dying in her sleep. And so I went back to Houghton because that's what my mom wanted me to do. Made it through my sophomore and junior year and my senior year. It got to be the Friday night before Thanksgiving, and we had a schedule. My mom called me on, I can't even remember what the schedule was now, but it was not Friday nights. And she called me like at 11:30 Friday night, and I'm like, what are you doing calling me? You know, and I thought for sure there was something wrong. And she was so excited. She had gone to bingo with my aunt that night, and she had won $1,000 jackpot. And she said, we're finally going to have a nice Thanksgiving and a nice Christmas. And I can, okay, Mom, see you Wednesday. Got up the next morning, went down to the library to study for my finals that were coming up. And my roommate, who was an athlete that had never graced the doors of the library in our 4 years, because she was always in the gymnasium, she said, your brother called, and you need to go to the campus center and call him. So, well, that was before cell phones. Just so those of you younger have a concept. And so I went over, and he said, you need to come home, and you need to pack for a week. And he says, I'm coming to pick you up. I'm like, okay. And so I talked to a friend, and they agreed to drive me up to the thruway exit in Rochester so my brother didn't have to drive as far. And my brother pulled up, and it was actually both of my brothers, which was an indicator to me that this was really bad because my brothers were never together and they didn't get along. And so I thought for sure it was my dad. And I got in the car and they told me my mom had passed away in her sleep. My fear. So we rode home. And I said to go to my dad's, because where else did I have to go? And I walked in the house, and I actually realized that day that my dad really loved my mom, because he was actually sober. And he asked me, do you think she forgave me? So, I'm sorry.
All right. I know that, you know, you talked about, to me, about going back to school after that Thanksgiving and how difficult that was, and but how even in the midst of probably one of the most difficult moments of your life, some of the Christian community that you had become a part of rallied around you. But tell me a little bit about what it was like for you to go home, or go back to school.
Yeah, actually, I didn't want to go back to school. My brother actually took me back, and I... didn't know that's where he was taking me because he took like this really roundabout way to get there. And he just said, go, go. And he pushed me out. And I was living off campus in a professor's house in my senior year. And I just walked up the stairs and I just didn't want to be there. And I got upstairs to my room and on my bed was an envelope. And in it was a check for my entire rent for my senior year. And they said, we think you can use this. And shortly after that, in the next few days, final exams started, and I was not in the mood to take those at all. And I walked into my first exam, and I had those little blue exam booklets. I don't know, Megan. And inside my first one was, do not worry about this test. We're going to give you the grades that you had at mid-semester. Just do not leave the room so the other students don't know. So to me, that was love and compassion. On top of six of my professors came up to Syracuse during the holiday to attend the funeral to support me. So that is how I found community at Houghton. I went on and I graduated the following May, which was Mother's Day. My brother and his family came down. My father didn't think it important. So I came back to Syracuse, moved in with my dad, pursued my career, pursued God. And that's where my life was.
And you ended up basically being a caregiver for your dad.
Yeah, because he actually was diagnosed with cancer shortly afterwards. So I made sure he got to all his appointments, was with him when he was sick, and didn't understand why I was doing that when he had done all this stuff in my life. But, yeah.
So you were 21 when you graduated from college, and you dove into your career and into church and in taking care of your dad, and meanwhile you're watching as your all your older siblings are married and families, and you're seeing your friends from college get married and go off, and what are you thinking?
I'm thinking, what am I doing? What's wrong with me? Why am I not fit to have these things happen to me? So, and then my sister moved home, and her and my dad bought a house together, and she lived in California previous to that, and we all lived in the house, and I was coming home one day, and my dad, who was basically a hermit, was sitting on the steps at our house, at the new house, and I said, Dad, what's wrong? You're never outside. And he goes, I can't breathe, Donna. I just can't breathe. And I said, let's go to the hospital. And he goes, no. And so we went in, and he went to bed, but he chose to lay on the couch in the living room, which I was thankful for because I could hear him from my bedroom. And my dad slept, and I was thankful for that. But I laid awake all night, and I listened to him breathe. And in the morning, he said, I need to go to the hospital. And we were driving along. And living up to the typical Central New York roads, there were all these potholes and bumps along the way and dips and all of those things. And he looked at me and he said, I hope that someday they fix this. And he says, I won't see it. This is my last ride. And I said, don't talk like that, Dad. So we got to the hospital, and after a battery of tests, he was diagnosed with lung cancer. And my dad decided not to have treatment because he had been through two other bouts of cancer, and he knew how hard treatment would be. And he's like, my children are grown. They have their lives. They can live. And I just need to let this run its course. So not very long after, he was in the hospital, and we, you know, did our thing, and we prepared for hospice. And my sister and I went home on a Saturday evening, and the phone rang the next morning, and the hospital told us we needed to get to the hospital. So, of course, we called our siblings, and we went to the hospital, and they stopped us before we got there until all of our other siblings came. And they told me they told us my father had passed away, and it was Mother's Day.
How old at this point?
I was 29.
29. Well, we're going to let you catch your breath here just a little bit. And I don't know if you need another one of those. But and Bob, we're going to pick back up with you in the Philippines again. And actually, you said you were in the military for 35 years. And, you know, I know that the story as you wandered from God? You tell us, what happened over those next 35 years?
Well, I was in the Air Force. I stayed in for 21 years, but another 14, 15 years after that, I stayed away from God. I didn't go to church. In fact, Noreen, when she's talking about being saved in the 70s, I don't think I even went in a church building. Life was fun sometimes. I was away from God and didn't even think about it. I went through the first marriage, and then I got married again, and I went through. It was very typical of military life. Marriages didn't last very long. There was all kinds of different reasons, but I got through that, and finally, at the end of the second one, was when my mother was in the nursing home, and my dad was being a pain. He and I didn't see eye to eye on just about anything, so instead of going to God, which, you know, that's the way I was raised, you know, in my teen years, I knew I should be going to God, but I didn't. So I went to alcohol and cigarettes. I smoked a lot, 2 packs a day, easy. And I was always drinking. So I was alone, and being a hermit and drinking way too much. One night, I worked where I was second shift, so I was always coming home late at night, 11, 12 o'clock, depends on business, the way business was. And so one night I got home, and at that time I was so alone, I got myself as like a hermit. I always had the lights out so the neighbors didn't know I was home. That's the way I didn't want anybody to know anything. And I turned on the TV, and I was sitting there and started listening to a preacher. I have no idea who it was. I don't remember who it was. I don't even remember the message. But God was in the room. The next thing I know, I was on my face on the floor. And I knew then that God was with me. So I gave myself back to God at that time. And I laid there. And I don't know how long I laid there. Finally, I stood up and I said, "Now what, God?" And the room filled with the words. And I heard the words. You know, the word says, "You know what to do." You know? And I looked across the room, and there's a pack of cigarettes and a bottle of beer. And I just said, "This is crazy." And I proceeded. I went to the kitchen. I emptied the beer out. I emptied the refrigerator out of all the beer and everything I could find. It all went down the drain. And a pack of cigarettes was there. And I said, "God, I can't do this. You're going to have to take these cigarettes." And I basically said, "You got to smoke them, because I 2 packs a day, and you want me to quit? I mean, that's an impossibility." But God takes care of that. And the next day I went to work. And every night when I got off work, I bought a pack of cigarettes, whether I needed it or not. And that's what I did. I hadn't smoked all day. And I didn't even think about that. But I bought this pack of cigarettes to smoke on the way home. It was a 28-mile drive. So I got out on the road, and going down through the mountains, and I lit up a cigarette. And it was the worst taste. I can't even explain how bad it tasted. It tasted so bad. I threw the cigarette out the window. And I looked over and I got the pack. I squashed up the pack and I threw it out the window. God had made that cigarette taste so bad that I still today, 19 years later, I don't smoke. I haven't smoked a cigarette from that day. And I haven't had any alcohol since that day. You know, God took it all away. And
so he didn't stop you and say, Bob, you know, 35 years you've wandered, you got a lot of making up to do. He just took you right back in just like that.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I look now as I look back, and even at that time, just not long after that, I always look back that all that 35 years, I did crazy things. In fact, I probably should be dead. You know, I mean, that's the way I looked at it. But God was with me all that time. God never left me. You know, I left him. I don't think I said a prayer for 30 years. You know? But he never left me. You know, as I look back, how many times that somebody had to have their hand in what happened to me. You know, my military time, and even afterwards, being a firefighter and stuff. I don't know.
So you were, you're kind of on a new course now. You know that not only that God's with you, but you're trying to follow him, but you still felt an aloneness. And so what'd you do for looking for community?
Yeah, I was, like I said, I was alone and everything. And I prayed a lot. And I just told God, look, I can't do this by myself. I need some help. I need some physical help. I need something, spiritual help. So you got to give me some help. During that time, I had signed up through on the computer, which things 19 years ago, 18 years ago, the computers aren't what we have today. So, you know, but I signed up for Christian Cafe, which was a chat room for Christians, also to meet other people. And I just went into chat. I was in every night when I got home from work. I started going in. Donna was part of that group. There was, I don't know, 20 of us total, some from Europe, all over the United States. We had a great time. One night I came home from work, and my friend called me and said that her brother was dying. He was cutting a tree down up in the property behind the house, and the tree fell on him, and so he was not expected to live tonight. And so when I went into Christian Cafe that night, I was very quiet. I didn't talk. You know, I talked a lot, you know, I guess, you know, everybody. And then all of a sudden on the computer screen, there were these words, what's wrong? And where did they come from? I didn't know. I said, like, who's talking and where did they come from? And in the chat room thing, there was a little note from her. It says, lower right-hand corner. So finally I realized I was supposed to look at the lower right-hand corner. And I look at the lower right-hand corner, and it said private chat. So I talked on that, and it was her. We talked. I told her what the problem was. Went back into the chat room, and all I remember is, with just in minutes, all my friends and her, we were all in the prayer room. The chat room also had a prayer room, and that's all of a sudden we're all in the prayer room. I think the biggest thing came from that was, you know, it's her fault when she said, what's wrong? I always say that, you know, it's your fault, you know. but the prayers that night and everything, the next morning I went to Erie to my friend, and his head was like this big, you know, and he wasn't expected to live. He was going to die for sure. And I prayed over him, and he lived. It was everybody's prayer, but it was, you know, it was just a thing that all of a sudden God's working with me, and I'm working with God. Mm. And I met her, and we just, one of the things was the telephones at that time, well, you got free minutes. There was long distance became free. It was like the first things. And so you had to sign up for different telephone companies that weren't. Anyway, I found one that was free long distance. And so we started talking. And the 1 month my talk with her on my phone bill was 14,000 minutes. So, well, we talked a lot.
So what did
we
you,
learned each other fast.
Donna, what did you do with your 200 minutes in those conversations?
I listened a lot. I started to see Bob as the man that God wanted me to see. And we got to the point where we were like, we should probably actually meet each other. And so Bob actually invited me down to his house in Pennsylvania and to meet his mom. And I was like, well, I don't know about this, but it is to meet his mom. So I kind of rationalized it, but I didn't tell a soul that I was going. So nobody knew where I was going. Nobody knew anything. And I got on the throughway, and I just like, God, I just need a sign that this is the right thing to do. Not a soul knows I'm doing this. Is this the right thing? And I called Bob, and I said, no, I'm not doing this. I says, I've been praying for a sign. I'm sorry. I just don't have a sign. And he says, stop at the next rest area and go in and get a drink and refresh yourself and come back out. Maybe you'll see things different. So I stopped at the next rest area, refreshed myself, got a drink, went back to the car. And while I was in there, there had been a rain shower. And I looked west in the direction I was supposed to go, and there was a rainbow completely crossing the westbound lane of the thruway. And I called Bob, and I says, there's a sign! There's a rainbow! There's a rainbow! And he's going, oh, good. And I says, no, I asked for a sign. Okay, does that mean you're coming? So we met in Olean, and he asked me to get in his car to go down to his house. And my first immediate thought was my mother. Now, my mom had been dead. This is 2003. My mom had been dead for 20 years, and here's my mother in my brain. Do not go in the woods with men. And so we left Olean, and where did we go? In the woods. And so I was a little nervous, and he goes, you okay? And I'm like, uh-huh. And I'm thinking, you better take me to meet your mother. So we did. He was honorable, and he took me to meet his mom, and she was very, very sweet, and I wish I'd gotten to know her much better before she passed to glory. But so then we went to his house. We stopped and bought a few steaks. We went to his house. When I arrived at his house, there was this beautiful bouquet of roses, and we spent hours and hours talking, and finally we decided it was time for him to take me back to my car in Olean. And so, again, we go through the woods, but this time in the dark. So I became very, very nervous again, and I got to my car, and I felt awful because I left those roses at his house. And I was like, that's like a slap in the face, Donna. What did you do? You blew it. And a couple days later in the mail, for 12 days, I got my roses in cards. He pulled the petals off of my stems, and he sent them to me in the card.
I told Bob in the first service, you're so romantic. And he said, well, I just didn't know how else to mail them to her. She wanted it.
Try it. You can't send a dozen roses. You know? Send them in pieces. You know?
Thankfully, he didn't send the thorns. So then I started thinking, okay, what does this mean, God? And I tried to really think about what this meant. You know, he was so much older than I was. And then God revealed to me that he was actually perfect, because that's what my life was. My siblings were older than me. My family was older than me. And so he fit right in. He had the similar circumstances that my brother had with being in the Vietnam War. He knew what it was to get drafted. He knew all of those things that my family could relate to. And so we moved forward and decided to get married. And
18 years.
18 years next week, next Sunday. So,
and I know that what's amazing to me, like, I love how God has been redeeming and restoring and redeeming your story. I know it's not always easy. I know you guys have had some challenges along the way, but just tell me if somebody were to ask you, like, I mean, you meet people all the time who might say, well, yeah, I know that God's supposed to, you know, be there for us, but my life is a mess. Where's my redemption? What would you tell somebody who is struggling to trust God in the midst of difficult times?
Yeah, actually, our first trial came about 6 months after we were married. Bob's youngest daughter, who was living in Texas with her mom at the time, had some issues, and her mom called and told us she was sending her to us. So we realized that that she had drug issues, and so we dealt for a few years with her drug issues, and sometimes we'd find her overdosed in our bathroom, in our backyard, whatever it may be. Another trial we went through was Bob was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and we went through cancer treatments. He's had several surgeries. We've had failed adoption. But we always told each other from the very beginning we would not divorce, that was not a word in our vocabulary. Because that wasn't what God designed all this for. And so it was not our option. So even though in these 18 years we've had all of these things happen to us that seem like negatives, I truly believe that every one of us has a path we're on, and underneath it's very smooth, but on top it's full of stones and rocks and mountains that you have to get through, and you have to remove, and you have to rely on your spouse, you have to rely on God, you have to rely on your friends, on your church family, to help you get over and under and to lift those things up out of there in order for you to see that smooth path that God has for you. And every one of those stones and rocks and mountains are there for a reason that God uses. And I can't say I'm looking forward to the next stone or rock or mountain that's out there, but I know that we have each other, and that we have God, and that we have you guys, so we're good.
Well, I thank you guys for sharing your story with us. And back when I first decided to talk about the book of Ruth in here, I think it was like after the first week, I knew that I wanted to have you guys share your story, and we were going to videotape it. Well, actually, I did videotape it, and I let Bob talk first, and he talked for 41 minutes. I'm like, there's no way I'm going to make this videotape. But at this, around the same time that I started this series, I called Carolyn and said, hey, do you know this song? Is this a song you'd be willing to do? We don't generally do special music here. It's not really something we do a lot, but I asked her if she'd do a special song. And so I hope this song ministers to each of you. It's just as we think about how God works in our lives and what he's doing behind the scenes. So I want to thank these guys. You can thank them as well for sharing.
Protection while we sleep. We pray. pray for healing, for prosperity. We pray for your mighty hand to ease our suffering. And all the while, you hear each spoken need. You love us way too much to give us lesser things. 'Cause what if your blessings come through raindrops? What if your healing comes through tears? What if a thousand sleepless nights are what it takes to know you're near? And what if trials of this life are your mercies in disguise? We pray for wisdom, your voice to hear. We cry in anger when we cannot feel you near. We doubt your goodness, we doubt your love, as if every promise from your word is not enough. And all the while, you hear each desperate plea, and long that we'd have faith to believe. 'Cause what if your blessings come through raindrops? What if your healing comes through tears? And what if a thousand sleepless nights are what it takes to know you're near? And what if trials of this life are your mercies in disguise? When friends betray us, when darkness seems to win, we know the pain reminds this heart that this is not our home. Because what if your blessings come through raindrops? What if your healing comes through tears? What if a thousand sleepless nights are what it takes to know you're near? What if my greatest disappointments or the aching of this life is a revealing of a greater thirst this world can't satisfy? And what if trials of this life, the rain, the storms, the hardest nights, are your mercies in disguise?